Save big on your next project at Menards. Check out our huge selection of Richmond water heaters. Whether it's electric or gas, tank or tankless, Menards has what you need in stock. Ensure that you have hot water for when you need it most with a new Richmond water heater from Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
First, a message from the disembodied spirit of our delightful sound man, Chris, who not only works for the Midnight Library, he's also written a book.
Hi there, I'm Christopher, and when I'm not adding stomach-churning sound effects to the Midnight Library, I write books to line its ornate shelves. My debut novel, called Nothing Works, Everything Happens, is a collection of science fiction short stories in which I try to understand why modern life feels so overwhelming, absurd, lonely, and sometimes, if you look hard enough, still worth the trouble. If you like thoughtful stories with a little existential dread humming in the background, you can find out more at ayasaya.com. That's A-I-Y-A-S-A-Y-A. .com. Back to the podcast.
Madam, what would you say if I told you that some digging workmen had stumbled into our catacombs?
I would say that we should welcome them.
Welcome them?
Yes, as permanent guests.
Right. Back in a bit.
Good boy. Go get them. This way. This way, everyone. I know it's tempting to wander off, but I do wish nearly all of you wouldn't. No, please. Don't follow Mr. Darling as he departs. It's not that he's not pleased to see you. I believe he's forgotten something and is going to viciously tend to it. So, this way, past me, over the threshold, and into the reading room. There you go. Yeah. What's that? Dear Eric, yes. You felt a change as you crossed over into the room. Well, that's odd. And you too, Zeta. And Michelle. All right, well, whatever you all say, just please take your favorite spot before someone else takes it first. There you go. Welcome to the Midnight Library, everyone. I am your well-preserved host, Miranda Merrick. I'd like to begin by saying, if this is your first visit with us, well, where the heck have you been? We've been holding these covert readings for some time now, and we continually send out and post all kinds of codes, cryptograms, hidden messages, and secret ciphers. They're on coins, on candles, on the end pages of the normal books in your normal library. There are invitations in the form of symbolic scratchings etched into church pews, gravestones, playground equipment, and sidewalks. We've charmed the very leaves on the trees to grow the veins on their leaves with subliminal messages coaxing you our way. We've even employed messengers. The frolicking foxes yipping in your yard at night? That's us trying to reach you. Those whispers that call after you on blustery days and put a chill down your back? That's not ghosts, that's us. Well, I mean, sometimes it is ghosts, but they're our ghosts, so it's still us. My point is, we're always wanting you. We love you, no matter what you've heard in the village. You are wanted in the Midnight Library. I'm afraid there's only a calming tea to be served on the hospitality tray tonight, my guests, as our subject matter isn't conducive to keeping full tummies full. Although Natasha has kindly thought to put several sleeves of her special digestive biscuits on the tray, just in case you become queasy. You know, inexplicably queasy. They're a beautiful dark purple biscuit with glinting little jewel-like poppy seeds and are dusted with, I'm uncertain just what. Not tomb sweepings and mummy dust. I know that for sure. Let us begin. Just out of curiosity, let me ask you, my lovely guest, if, after your long ways off, I'm sure, death, if you had the option to have your dried corpse dressed in your favorite outfit, carried underground, and stood upright and anchored to a plaster wall for all of eternity, with milling throngs of live people shuffling by, staring up at you and secretly taking your picture, would you? No judgment, of course. I rather see the appeal of it. It's interesting and social, and less lonely than being alone in a box underground, and far less destructive than several other alternatives. Here's a vital fact to know. Catacombs initially were places of honor and preservation. Long ago, there weren't commonly painted artworks of people to remember other people by. And there certainly weren't photos or videos of anyone. So, people thought far differently than we do today about death and the dead. One group who began a sacred catacomb were the Capuchin monks of Palermo, Italy. Let me just clarify for you here between the origin of Capuchin monks and Capuchin monkeys. The name or word Capuchin comes from the old Italian word Cappuccio, meaning cowl or hood. The 1500s religious order of monks, whose trademark garb was their brown hooded robes, caused the word Cappuccio to be morphed into the descriptor Capuchin, meaning hooded ones. The South American monkeys, with the same moniker, came along more than 200 years later, in the 1780s, and were called such because their dark hair on their heads was thought to resemble the darkened hoods of the Capuchin monks. The Order of the Capuchin Monks of the Church of Santa Maria della Pace, or Our Lady of Peace, was established in 1534 in the city of Palermo. It was they who began the burying of their brethren in a simple but developing cemetery that would become the expansive catacombs. The early deceased friars were buried by digging a collective underground grave for them, described by the cemetery itself as a kind of massive tank. This tank or holding area was rather extensive and was dug out from beneath the church's altar of Saint Anne, and the bodies of the monks accumulated there. Monk by monk by dead monk. As both the congregation and the order of monks of the church grew, so did the underground population of deceased brethren. Roughly 60 years later, in 1597, the initial tank room of the dead became insufficient to hold many more monks. So excavations went underway to drastically expand the resting place of future friars. Conveniently, it was discovered that the local caves could be modified and incorporated into the growing underground cemetery. The expansion was on a grand scale, and it was decided, out of respect, that many of the earliest entombed monks would be sought out, their bodies and clothing tended to, and that they would then be spread out, given more room, and positioned in the newly dug channels and passages. This effort of retrieving the early dead led to a bizarre discovery. 45 long-deceased friars were found to be in pristine condition. They were naturally mummified and extremely well-preserved. So well, in fact, that their faces could be recognized. This refusal to rot was seen as a divine sign. The non-corruption of these dead was taken as a sign that this place of eternal rest, here in the catacombs, was heavenly sanctioned and should therefore continue devoutly. Now, I am sure that you, being as clever as you are, you know that the real secret to the fresh-looking friars was the consistent atmosphere, the stable lack of humidity of the underground tunnel system that had them looking so spiffy after all that time, and perhaps not quite so much any kind of heavenly help. I'd like to stress to you here just how much faith this discovery of the undecayed dead was. The church viewed this as an act of God. The plan to simply tend to and move the deceased monks to better spots was totally revamped with serious upgrades. The bodies were tended to, but now in much more detail. And now, there was a much more intentional directive to prepare the uncorrupted corpses, and even those who had deteriorated a bit, for the purpose of display. Many were given cleaned or even new robes Some were adorned with crosses, and their hands were folded or posed across their bodies. They were then affixed with rigging wires and propped up along the walls and inside the nice new niches. The very first friar to be placed in the new and improved catacombs was placed there out of great respect, of course. But he was also kind of given a job. Friar Silvestro de Gubbio, dressed in the signature brown robes and wearing a holy headdress, was given something to hold. His forever clutched fingers bear a commemorative sign, displaying the opening date of the new catacombs, October 16th, 1599. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by the League of Lady Gravediggers and Grimm's Grocers. We really bet that you have found eternal options to be rare, just lying in the boring ground with no one there to stare. If your corpse just had a home and a glaring crowd, imagine a dusty catacomb and you in a crusty shroud. The League of Lady Gravediggers have keys to the great below. But even if you've riggered, the process can be slow. They'll need to move cadavers and to break some holy rules. But it's your corpse that matters and a way to keep it cool. That's where your friendly grocer provides them with the means to keep your carcass closer to the frozen corn and beans. Grimm's has those giant freezers filled with frozen trout. They'll keep any gal or geezer from ever thawing out. Grimm's fridges will protect you beneath their fish fillets, until the ladies collect you and put you on display. If you would like to be secretly admitted to one of many closed catacombs in your region and beyond, you can strike a deadly deal and hang out under the frozen meals with some help from Grimm's Grocers, while the League of Lady Gravediggers find just the right spot for you in the catacomb of your choice. Probably. Call the League of Lady Gravediggers today to plan your eternal bare bones show. The League of Lady Gravediggers is not responsible for accidental thawing, missing body parts, corpse chipping, permeating fish goo, or freezer burn during your cadaver stay at Grimm's Grocers. And neither is Grimm's. Call 976-DITCH-WITCHES. That's 976-DITCH-WITCHES. To say that the initial 45 monks found in fine condition were popular would be a tremendous understatement. They were the talk of Palermo and the surrounding villages. People wanted to see them, and the catacombs became a much visited and venerated location. During the 1700s, restrictions were loosened a bit, and religious adjacent people were displayed in the tunneled and paved tombs as well. Soon, the congregation members began requesting that they or their loved ones be permitted to be admitted into the blessed catacombs. And since the structure was large then and could still be enlarged in the future, in 1783 it was decided that anyone who wanted to be visible forever could be. More digging ensued. Now, what became the norm back then might be a bit much for many of us, well, you, to learn about. But that's not my problem, so here we go. It was common, very common, a few hundred years ago, for the families of the deceased, who were either laid out in wall niches, stood upright along the walls, or lying, resting in their coffins, it was common for the living family members to not only visit their dead, but also to unrest them, clean them up a little, change their hairstyle, and to undress and redress them in new, more stylish clothing. As odd as that may sound today, it was just another part of the grieving process and a way of honoring the dead centuries ago. But one thing that's as relatable today as it was back then: the wealthy often paid the church to reserve the best spots for their dead. Being on the best lit wall, wearing nicer clothes than all the other dead people, and maybe even being placed a few inches higher up to look down on the visitors, became a status symbol. Goddess help us. The Capuchin catacombs, with its pretty inlaid tile floors and long straightaways of intersecting tunnels, holds more than 8,000 dead, most of them clearly on display, and only a few feet from any visitor. The atmosphere below is diversified, with darkened cave-like walkways, with the dead hanging upright on the rough-hewn walls, and brightly plastered showrooms complete with fancy rugs, and the dead in display cases or in their coffins. Some rooms are lined with shelves, and the shelves are lined with dry, smiling skulls. All of the mummified dead are in various states of decay. Some are the barest of bones, with their teeth and lower mandibles missing entirely. Some have patches or a good portion of their leathery skin and hair very much attached. But they are all a very similar color, being a dusty dark brown. There are mysterious caped or hooded skeletons, while other sets of bones are wearing flowery prints or the uniform of the profession they typically wore in life, with their jaws, if they have them, slung wide open, they sport vintage hats, caps, and scarves, and hold books or rosaries that are wired forever to their bony hands. The Capuchin catacombs, once the public was permitted to be part of the displayed dead, was divided into collections and segregated. Different corridors were designated according to a person's gender, their status in society, or their profession. So, down one vaulted ceiling tunnel, you will find only priests. Another holds common men or women, and sadly, children. Let us talk of mummies for a moment, my dear guests, as nearly all of the 8,000 plus bodies of the dead displayed in the vast catacombs are definitely considered to be mummified. Now you may be thinking of the Egyptian process of preserving a set of human remains, and there are similarities, but definitely minus the pulling out of the brains through the nasal cavity. The Capuchin dead are in a state of natural mummification, which relies heavily on dehydration. The stable dryness of the subterranean tunnel system just naturally draws out any and all moisture or fluids from the dead. If you stayed down there long enough, I imagine the same would happen to you. In any case, like the Egyptian process, as a way of later expediting the drying process, the monks, the living ones, placed the bodies of the dead into special rooms called collatio. This word, oddly enough, means colander or strainer in Italian. In the collatio, they cut open and removed the damp organs of the dead, then stuffed the emptied torsos with hay or aromatic bay leaves. The dead were then laid out on a kind of grid made of terracotta tubes to further aid in the draining away of the body's so-called humors or fluids. And this was no quick thing. The collatio, or rooms within it, were closed up for nearly a year to hasten the process. Only later were the pre-dried remains unsealed, given a vinegar bath, and dressed in their designated outfits, and laid out or hoisted up in their special spot in the catacombs. This process only varied during times of plagues or epidemics, when instead of vinegar, the corpses were washed in a bath of arsenic, which worked surprisingly better. Proof of this can be seen by viewing the body of Antonio Prestigiacomo, a man said to be quite vain in life, who wanted to look as lifelike as possible in death. His corpse was also injected with arsenic and mercury, which has kept his flesh a very reddish pink ever since he died in 1844. He's also one of the few skeletons staring back at every visitor with his professionally fitted glass eyes. You may find it interesting to know that many of the catacombs dead were originally fitted with glass eyes in the color of their own in life. But they kept mysteriously disappearing during World War II. It was later discovered that American GIs, or soldiers, were the culprits. They were prying loose and popping out the eyes of the dead to keep as souvenirs. Official burials of the public in the catacombs ended in 1880, although a few exceptions were arranged as late as the 1920s and 1930s. In fact, there's every chance you may have heard of one of these late interments, as she is likely the most famous of the dead at rest there. She is also a child. In 1920, on December the 6th, Rosalia Lombardo died of pneumonia, just 1 week shy of her second birthday. This loss came as such a devastation to her family that her broken-hearted father petitioned the church to admit her into the closed catacombs. He also sought out and hired the skilled embalmer and taxidermist, Alfredo Salafia, to apply his secret technique to keep his dear daughter precisely the same, forever. Known as the Sleeping Beauty of the Capuchin Catacombs, Nearly 2 year old, Rosalia Lombardo lies in a small, sealed, glass-top casket. Like a precious doll, nestled in a blanket of satiny material, the perfectly preserved little girl has healthy-looking flesh, plump, rosy cheeks, and soft, long eyelashes. The loose ringlets of her bright blonde hair are neatly topped with a brilliant yellow bow. In fact, the child is so well preserved, she looks as though she's only resting and may sweetly awaken any second. This rumored awakening is indeed what has made Rosalia famous, because countless visitors have reported seeing the little girl's crystal blue eyes partially open. The phenomenon of the blinking child has been so pervasive that hundreds of photographs of her under differing light conditions have been taken to try to debunk the reports that her pink eyelids slightly open and close, depending upon when she's viewed. And although it is said that the marvel of the occurrence is just a trick of the shifting light, little Rosalia Lombardo is still referred to as the waking princess of Palermo. You are welcome to visit her and to take a 3-hour leisurely tour of the tunnels to see all of the other thousands of mummified dead from Monday through Saturday at the museum/mausoleum of the Capuchin Catacombs in Palermo, Italy. I'm sorry, what's that? When can you visit the Midnight Library's catacombs? Who said we have catacombs? Lots of people. Oh, those boring little people have no life and nothing to do except to talk about us. Let me remind you that, how's it go? Nothing goes down behind the devil's back that doesn't come back up over his stomach. What's it mean? Well, I have no idea, but only my grandmother says it right before she does that dance of hers under the waxing moon. So maybe you should all bear that in mind. Oh, look! Mr. Darling has arrived just in time to see you out. Good night, my dear guests. Good night.
Well, madam, the workmen have been cleaned down to their bones and stuffed into their niches.
Good. Did you save their work uniforms? I want to start dressing up our dead like the Capuchins did. It's so classy.
Madam, their uniforms are ripped to shreds.
Well, raid your Halloween costumes. I want those skeletons dressed up somehow.
Right. One Snoopy, one Goofy, and one Scooby-Doo coming right up.
So very classy. This message is for you, my dear guest. It's important to me that you know that you are welcome and valued here. Why? Because I know that you are a real person. And I'd like you to know that in spite of what you may hear in the village, that I am a real person too. I am not an AI-generated thing, pieced together by robbing the work of others and presented by a soulless algorithm, meant to spew a random flood of content at you that only masquerades as quality entertainment. I choose the subjects I think you'll like. I diligently research the topics, using only reputable books and sites. I alone write every single word you hear. I choose each piece of music and every eerie fun sound. I am the Midnight Library. I am the Reading Room. I am every character. I am the Broom and Fang Pub, the fog that floats in the graveyard, and every Lady Gravedigger. And I am honored that you enjoy what I create. So I will ask you to support the Midnight Library, as many of my beloved friends do. Please visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary, and I'll meet you there. Thank you.